And joining me right now here on the Mark Mosey Show to go over the latest on the Orlando Magic, who are now seriously winning some big-time basketball games. He is my good friend Mike Tuck, local broadcaster and instructor with the Dan Patrick School of Sportscasting. Mike, how you doing today?
I'm awesome, dude. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing just fine. I do want to get to draft, but I want to start with the Magic. They won last night. They've won three in a row there at the Kia Center. I think I saw a stat where, with about 20 games to go, they're about 9-10 games above 500. They're winning basketball games. What is your take, man? You've been here a long time covering this team.
Yeah, I've gotten to see ups and downs, and you know the highest points they've reached, and obviously the lowest bottoming out that we've seen from the club in the past, to the point where they've had number one picks. What I think's really cool about this, and obviously a hope would be to be a playoff team this year, right? And look, they still could be a play-in team that has to play their way into the playoff. That's still to be determined. But what I think is really cool is they're not just kind of sitting and waiting, right? They're not like down where Atlanta is or Brooklyn is or Chicago is, where it's like, all right, here we are. We're just sort of waiting to see who we're going to play on the road in this play-in. It's that they're in a position where every night is scoreboard watching, not just watching your own game and being excited about what the Magic are doing, but watching carefully as Cleveland plays New York, watching to see what Indiana is doing, watching to see what Philadelphia is doing. Like, all these games matter because you can move up or down any given night in the seeding chain, you know, to the point where you could get as high as four, or maybe that you're going to be playing in that play-in. So I think that's the added element that most Magic fans, even the optimistic ones, probably didn't think was going to happen this year. But it's very crowded in that second tier of the Eastern Conference right now, and the Magic are part of it.
Yeah, right now they're 35-26. They hold the sixth seed. Half game out of Philadelphia, a game out of four, like you're saying. Cleveland, all right, you're about 4.5 out of the three seed. And then right there, Milwaukee, I know. Is this a success then? I know, it's crazy to say. Is this a success if they get into the playoffs and not even the play-in tournament, but one of those top six seeds?
I think I kind of talked about this last week when I was on there here in Orlando. It's too early to determine that outcome. I know we love to do what you just did with that question. Believe me, play that game all the time.
Yeah.
But it's too early to say because, all right, let's say they get six, and let's say they get Milwaukee. I'm just throwing out one of the teams that's in the mix there. And they get swept 4-0. Does it feel like a success? Well, maybe in retrospect, maybe, you know, in 2 months removed, 3 months removed, you feel like, yeah, that was really fun. That was a great season. But right after? Probably not. Not if it's an in-out, wham-bam, thank-you-ma'am kind of situation. So I do think it matters how they exit the tournament before we determine whether or not we think it's a success or how we feel about the season. I think to evaluate it today, clearly, if you're a Magic fan and you just laid it out there, nine games above 500, first time in nearly a decade, yeah, like you're feeling really good about where you're at if you're a Magic fan. There's no really other way to evaluate it. And look, if you're a pessimistic Magic fan, even for you, you're going, yeah, they could have won this, they could have won this. That's great because now you're actually caring about, you know, close losses during the year and not just feeling indifferent to any loss during the season.
Do you feel like Jeff Weltman, the mad scientist, him and his staff, they've been working on this for like 4 years, 5 years or so, that it's finally starting to pay off? We're finally starting to see results, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that you could look at it any other way because at some point it needs to. And frankly, if they didn't have the track record and maybe if perhaps the Magic hadn't been spinning their wheels for as long as they had, they would not have been given a leash as long. Let's be frank. They have not had success in terms of wins and losses in running this program, but they are finally starting to see the fruits of their labor. And then the next phase of it is always the most interesting one because, all right, what does that produce when we really start caring about the results? What does it result in the playoffs? What does it look like? Because, look, you can get burnt out on winning as well when it doesn't result in traveling where you want to get to in the playoffs, where you switch management, you switch coaches, you switch players, because only one team gets to win the whole thing. And the Magic, is maybe you're pumped about that duo today. if they go 4-0 in the first round and next year it looks the same, you won't be as pumped about it.
Does Jamal Mosley have a case for being coach of the year?
Yeah, he's in the conversation. Do I think he's going to win it? Probably not, because of some of the surprising stories out west with Oklahoma and Oklahoma City and Minnesota, that'll probably take him out of that mix. But yeah, like I think he is going to be in a lot of people's top three on the ballot, because especially if they finish, like you mentioned, if they're in the top six, then I think that there's no doubt like he's going to be in that discussion as we get ready for the playoffs and that those votes are cast of, hey, look what this team was able to do. Look at the jump they were able to make from last year to this. It's the way we do all of the pro sports. It's regionalized, so I have no doubt regionally he's going to get some first place votes for the honor. Others, he might be left off the ballot, but he's going to be in the discussion.
Yeah, he better be in the discussion. I'm going to go over why. Yeah. All right, here we go. We're here with Mike Tuck. All right, here's the overall records for the Magic over the last decade. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
There's a lot of pain what I'm about to tell you. All right, so when did Dwight leave? 2012?
2012, yeah.
All right, so if you go, I'll start with this. 12-13 season, and I'll just rattle them up till now. 20-62, 23-59, 25-57, 35-47, 29-53, 25-57, 42-40, 33-40, 21-51, 22-60, 34-48, and now 35-26. They did it, buddy. We got out of the basement. I hope you're happy. Yay!
No, like one of those things I remember having the conversation, you know, on the back end of the Dwight, and then, you know, where people try to take the optimistic approach of, all right, we'll just reset it, we'll get right back to where we were. Look, I'll deliver as simple an example as this. Who picked first in the draft last year?
Ooh, do I even remember? San Antonio. Oh, yeah. San Antonio.
Right.
Yeah.
You know who's going to pick first this year if there wasn't a lottery?
San Antonio.
Right. So you can get stuck. You know who's also up there? Detroit. They took Kate Cunningham a couple of years ago, right? Like, you can get stuck up at the top of that lottery, and while you think it's going to just, oh, wow, no problem, we're just going to, you know, draft like two or three times up here, we'll get our stars and we'll be back. We got a decade of evidence that wasn't the case for the Orlando Magic. So you do have to get a little lucky sometimes with the year you're picking high. But as we see every draft, there are guys that don't go number one that end up becoming superstars. You got to identify those guys wherever you pick.
All right. Now I'll have the real tough one. And this is open for discussion here with Mike Tuck. Is Paolo Banchero, is he a star in the NBA now?
Yeah, I think star, like, he's an all-star. That encompasses star to me, so he's definitely a star. That's the fun thing, right? Like, is you see how much he's grown just in a couple of years, and I don't think there's an evident and obvious ceiling. Sometimes you can see where it's like, all right, they're going to be limited athletically, or they're going to be limited because they don't have a great shot, or they're going to be limited because they need others to support them. There's no obvious limitations with him offensively because he's 6'10". He can put the ball on the ground. He can pass the ball very effectively off the dribble or on the catch. Like, he does everything well, and he's only going to get better at doing it. Now, where does that put him? I don't know. That's kind of the fun thing is, will he end up being a top 10 player? Maybe. Will he end up being a top 5 player? Maybe. I don't know that I see obvious, oh, he's going to be the best player in the league, because there are some other guys that clearly show up that you think, well, that's in their future. They could be the next LeBron or the next Kevin Durant or Steph Curry and up in that echelon. But he's up there. And look, Franz isn't too far behind. Like, I was playing around with the idea, you know, as I think a lot of people were after the All-Star break, of what if they did a U.S. versus international. And if they did, the international would be very big, but a guy like Franz Wagner probably be one of the guys that have to be on the team because he can actually dribble the ball and shoot the ball. There's not a ton of international players in the NBA that fit that mold, and he does, and that's not a slight. That's a compliment to him. He's an outstanding player who certainly can be a supporting role all-star player. for the team moving forward. Now, how do you build the rest of the team around them? You found a couple of super talented pieces. Now, how do you make the rest of the pieces fit? And if you're the front office, that's where you're on the clock, is making it work with your stars, because as we've seen, no matter what the city, no matter who the star, at some point they can become impatient if that process is too slow.
Yeah, can we sign Paolo to like a 10-year deal now?
Not anymore. Not anymore. There was a time in the NBA you could do that. There was also a time you couldn't do it, and you'd have Shaq leave after four seasons without no hope of keeping him.
I can't stress this enough. There needs to be meetings right now with the front office. Like, whatever happens, we're keeping Paolo here. There can't be any mistakes. Whatever you do.
I think when you know within the first three seasons on a guy, you know you have them for 7 years, barring catastrophe, injury, or they just flat out go James Harden on you. You know you have them for 7 years, so you have to think in that timeline of, all right, the Magic have 5 years to find a way to make this work, to ink him to another deal beyond the rookie and then the rookie extended deals. Like, to the point where he has to show he's a max level $60 million a year guy, which is hard to wrap your head around, but that's where we're at. Or, you know, he shows it, and now if you're the Magic, we keep him, but he has to be convinced to stay with the pieces around him competing for a championship.
Mike Tuck, have you seen Chet Holmgren play so far this season?
Yeah, I love Chet. Chet's a fun watch.
Okay, so the hypothetical is, would he have worked in Orlando? I don't know. I think he's on the right team. Like, I think this all worked out, which is crazy to say. I think if the Magic took Chet Holmgren, I don't know if he's getting the same results as he is on Oklahoma City.
I think great players, like, life will find a way. Jeff Goldblum, Jurassic Park, right?
Yeah.
Like, I felt that with quarterbacks, like any discussion. I think, like, greatness tends to find a way no matter the circumstance. Some people need things to unfold for them to show it, and that's fine. It's not a knock, but sometimes that's the case. I think some guys are so great they find a way. I think Chet would have fit. It just would have meant probably trading Wendell Carter at some point. Chet starting at center, or maybe they start him at four. But, like, he's still a 17-10 guy in Orlando. Franz probably is more of a centerpiece, right, because he's going to be the guy handling the ball a little bit more. So maybe you'd see a different Franz, maybe an all-star level Franz, because maybe his scoring goes up a tick. But it worked out fine for both guys. Just like I think Paolo would be a different player in Oklahoma City, to your point, where they got a guy scoring 31 a game there in Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. So Paolo may not score 25 there. Maybe he'd be a 20 points per game score there, but it would affect Jalen Williams, who's a good player for them. Like, there is certainly a domino effect that you talk about. So I do think, to your point, for Oklahoma City, they probably wouldn't change a thing. Even if Paolo is better than Chet, Chet fits their scheme much better, I think, than Paolo does at this point because of who they have.
What's so interesting to me about this what if, you and me both covered that draft process for about 5 weeks. Remember, Jabari Smith was in the discussion for one. I had many people say Smith. And I remember on draft night, Magic take Paolo, which was, there was kind of this shock feel to it. Like, wait, this is who we're taking? And I remember the Rockets fan base had their watch party. They thought they were getting Paolo at three. And it's crazy. I've not heard one word about Jabari Smith in the NBA. Have you, Mike?
Nothing.
He's a solid guy, but that's the I don't want to toot my own horn, but I feel like I need to, because that wouldn't be authentically honest if I didn't say that I was right about this. I was not the lone voice, obviously, but I was a loud voice in a crowd of people that were leaning Jabari or leaning Chet, that was screaming, Paolo is the guy. It's an offensive league. He's the most skilled offensive player. Everyone would want to talk about Jabari and Chet on defense. And I said, I don't care. You need an offensive centerpiece. They've been drafting defensive players since Dwight. It has not worked out. You need a guy, you put the ball in his hands and let him go, and he's going to be successful, right? Like, that's the guy they need. So I was 100% correct on that. It's not a knock on Jabari. Like, he's not asked to do as much, but that was also what I kind of thought he would be out of Auburn, is more of a catch and shoot, corner three, complimentary piece. And the Magic needed a star, and I thought Chet was easily the second choice. And so far, clearly, I think they're the two best players in that draft.
I'll always remember where Pat Welter, who used to work for News 13, you've met Pat.
Yeah.
Pat is there in North Carolina. He covers Duke and UNC. And I remember getting him on, and he covered Paolo the whole year. And he came on, no hesitation. He's like, you're taking Paolo at number one. Like, Paolo's the man. And I was like, and I remember asking, like, are you for real? And he's like, oh, yeah, you're taking Paolo. It's just funny in hindsight. I think Paolo has blown away expectations in the first two seasons with the Magic. Do you feel that way?
No, but I don't mean that as a slight. I mean, I expected this. I thought he'd be great. He's great. You know, he's a guy, if there was weaknesses defensively, and some of that was Duke playing him at times as a small ball center, because that's what you do in college with a 6'10 guy who can do some things. And his shooting ability, right? He didn't shoot the college three as well as the other two guys did. And you know what? He's still not as good of a shooter as those guys. But that's small change compared to the big picture of what he brings to the table on that end of the floor. And he's not been a liability on defense, not really even for a day. There's not too much conversation about that, is there? And I didn't think he would be. So, to me, he has delivered exactly as I thought he would. He hasn't over-delivered, and that's, again, not a knock. I think he's just a great player. He's been great. I think he's going to continue to be great. I don't know where the ceiling is, but I'm excited to see where it goes.
You're like, for $10,000, who will be the first pick in this upcoming draft?
I have no idea. A European player. It is what it is, man. I enjoy watching the NBA draft. I don't need it on two nights, as they're talking about doing. I get it. It's long. Like, they're honestly, since I don't do this on a day-to-day basis anymore on radio, like, I watch the whole thing, so I'll tap out in the second round. I don't need to know. I'll look the next day to see who went where. I don't care that much about it. But there used to be a time I'd loved it. Like, beginning to end, you knew all the guys, and that's not where we're at. And
no.
Like, it's okay that you have Wimby, who we've been talking about for years. But, like, this draft, you're arguably the top three, four guys are going to be European players that you've never seen play before a game of college basketball.
That's a great point, because I feel like with March Madness here in a couple weeks, with this tournament, I feel like there is a college basketball player that finally is going to get a national platform, could go on a Steph Curry-type run, and be a top three pick in this draft. I'm not kidding, Mike. It's right there for you if you want it. Right there.
You have someone in mind?
No. You know what? See, this is my problem. I used to know who the best players were. I knew who'd be the top pick. I knew it used to mean – I know, this is where I sound like I'm an old man. It used to mean something to be the number one team in the country. Now, every week someone's number one. I don't know. They have Houston's ranked number one, and they're going to be at UCF, and I don't think it's a big deal. Like, whatever. That's the problem.
Yeah, the familiarity. And look, I think, not to tangent, but a little bit tangent, I talked about it in class today a little bit because someone brought it up with college football. It's the fear where that sport's going is the lack of familiarity, because we're going to have so many players transferring and jumping around. You're not going to feel connected to anybody. You're going to be like, wait a second, where did he play? And then you're like, oh, yeah, he played here, here, and here. It's like three different schools you're trying to remember. And it's the same thing in college basketball. Like, God, you know I love this as much as anybody, right? Like, and there are times I'll watch an NBA game, and I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, and I'm like, oh, my God, I don't remember where he went, because they were there only as a freshman. Mm-hmm. I only saw him play five times, which is a lot probably, and I can't recall exactly what Pac-12 school they went to or what Big Ten school they went to, because they weren't even great in college. They were just projected to be great as a freshman.
I've told you that joke. We're going to watch Sunday Night Football in the fall, and they're going to do player introduction, and that's going to happen. Where they're going to be like, I went to Clemson, Florida State, and Washington State.
Right.
This is going to happen. And they didn't. And you know what? They still didn't get their degree. That's what I imagine.
That's not even the first. I mean, they're getting paid now. The degree almost doesn't matter anymore.
Oh, man. Can I come talk to your class? I want to hear these, like, 20-year-old sports fans. I want to hear how their brain works. I want to do it.
You'll be surprised how old you feel when you start bringing stuff up from when you were a young adult and you realize they weren't even alive yet.
Oh, no. Here's what I know also, Mike Tuck. I'll be like, hey, are you guys on Facebook? And they'll look at you like I'm a 75-year-old man. That's when I know.
Right.
Okay. But by the way, I don't think Mike Tuck's on Facebook. Is this correct?
I'm not. Oh, I'm not a social media darling.
Did you do this to try to fit in with the 17-year-olds? Is that what happened?
Is that what it is? No, like, obviously every generation's a little bit different, and, you know, you got to be aware of these things. And, you know, with your job and my job is what it was, like, there's some things you're told to do, and you have to learn how to do.
All right, before I let you go, I know the NFL Combine was pretty much over the last week.
Mm-hmm.
Do we hype it too much with the combine and the draft, where we should maybe be talking about other sports?
That depends on your audience, and your audience will let you know. I think it's, you know, we've talked about just television ratings before, and, like, you know, 94 of the top 100 shows in a given year are NFL content. So the argument there is no. Like, people want to know what Xavier Worthy ran in the 40. Like, that's as big of a story as anything that happened in the NBA. Right. And for better or worse, like, you may not care, but enough people care more about that. They'll rather watch guys running spandex, you know, running drills and catching balls and hearing people talk about them than they would actually watch a basketball game or a spring training baseball game or whatever. Right. Like, that's it is what it is. Your audience tells you what by the numbers, and the numbers indicate they want to talk NFL, even if it is just guys working out.
It was fascinating. I'd say the last two weekends, I'm driving around and I'm thinking about, hey, we're going to go into March. It'll be March Madness. I'm thinking, you know, spring training here in the state of Florida, you know, but teams are back. Man, I'm listening to like five different national shows. It's all NFL. You are absolutely right. I think this past season, I think the NFL got even more popular. And it just, okay, what's the most popular sport in this country? It's NFL football. There's no debate. And I think, and this is just my opinion, I think number two is further away to one. I think, and maybe it's college football, maybe it's basketball. I think NFL is starting to separate itself from two, three, and four. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, it's no contest. NFL is number one. It's number two. It's number three. It's number four. Like, NFL-related content would rank ahead of probably college football at this stage. Just looking at the ratings on things would be second. And then, you know, big time, you have to go to big time games, like postseason games of the NBA or postseason games for baseball to even, you know, incrementally get close to where NFL is. So, yeah, look, I think that as a host, you always want to lead into what you're passionate about, and you can talk about those other things, but to bring it back to football is never a bad idea. You know, you got to pick your moments. There's things obviously that happen in those sports that are worth discussing, but you can't go wrong talking, like, again, incessantly about what's going to happen with the draft, incessantly what's going to happen with free agency starting next week. Like, an audience in this state, at least, and maybe all the states, would prefer you talk about, you know, incoming free agents and outgoing free agents and trade ideas as opposed to breaking down the game last night in the NBA.
I had to work a seafood festival this past weekend, Saturday and Sunday.
That sounds like a pleasure.
Yeah, it was. Let me tell you something. Just ask, you want to start a conversation? Ask them who their football team is. That's all you need to do. I'm telling you, you can be like, oh, who do you like in basketball? You know, I like LeBron. That's kind of like the answer. Like, yeah, I kind of like the Magic. No. You ask them football, they will give you their college or their NFL team, no hesitation in their voice. That's my advice for you every time.
We're a football country. You're 100% right.
You're absolutely right. And I'll say, what should my Bears do at number one? And what should they do with Fields? And then everyone gets confused what the answer should be. It's going to be Caleb Williams. It's going to be the first pick. I hope you know that. It's going to be 13.
Oh, I know it. I've been trying to tell everyone that's a Bears fan that is still fighting the good fight for Justin Fields to say, get on board. The train's leaving the station with or without you.
Mike Tuck, thank you so much for coming on. Have a great week, man.
Always a pleasure.